Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. Wanted to say thank you to Sarah for filling in last week with all the extra news that came up when I wasn't able to hop on. I haven't listened yet, to be totally honest with you, but I'm sure it was great. I've listened to the clips that Sarah has shared on Instagram. Anyway, quick shout out to our friends at Java House here in Indy. They have kept me awake this week after a busy 10-day stretch. And if you like cold brew coffee or the tea that they have, you can go to a couple of locations in Indy or go to their website, javahouse.com. Use promo code PITLANE10. Get 10% off all your orders. Thank you for all the support. Let's talk about, where did we race last week? We raced to Spa. We'll talk a little bit about Zandvoort coming up this weekend. Yeah. So let me ask you this question, and then we'll go wherever you want to go with this. Did you find Spa pretty boring?
Yeah, surprisingly I did, which was unexpected for sure, because I usually think of that as a very good track. But I think the problem, if I was to diagnose it, is the DRS. Yeah. I don't think at a track where you have the straights as long as you do, like at Spa, that you really even need DRS because you have a toe. So I think it was Scott Mitchell Malm on the Race F1 podcast. Yeah. He suggested something like maybe you just remove DRS for tracks that have a straight of a certain length. Like maybe that's some kind of regulation they can come up with as they hopefully are able to phase DRS out moving forward. But it was so boring to just see cars go past on the Kemmel straight, like the car in front wasn't even moving. Yeah,
the first three laps, I'm like, ah, cool, this is going to be a good race. The last 41 laps, I couldn't tell you a single interesting thing that happened other than Verstappen just ran away with it, and that's not really interesting to talk about.
Ocon had two passes where he passed two cars in one move, so. Yeah. Those were memorable, but other than that, yeah, it was the first lap incidents pretty much, and then Ferrari, for some reason, bringing Leclerc in at the end to try to get the fastest lap point, and instead he got a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pits and lost the point they were trying to get, and the position, so to Alonso.
Yeah, so let's start there. What blackmail does Mattia Binotto have on whoever is above him at Ferrari, whose name is now escaping me, that he can just willy-nilly pull shit like this? And every week we talk about Ferrari bungling strategy, and then he comes out and says, well, we didn't really bungle the strategy. Like, how does he continue to get away with this? And you probably don't have an answer to that, but it is, and I'm not like a Ferrari fan by any means, but it's so frustrating because this championship, the first three rounds of the season, was shaping up to be an epic battle and is now a wet fart.
I guess Mattia Binotto maybe has the ultimate say, but he's not the one calling the strategy, right? So he's not necessarily responsible, but I guess, I mean, it comes down to him with the leadership position that he's in, so he should either hold those accountable who keep screwing up, or then he should be held accountable.
Also, at the end of the day, he's the boss, and the boss is accountable for mistakes that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Ferrari is put together enough of an organization still, even though they kind of were able to piece together a really fast car this season. I don't think the organization itself would be affected by a change in leadership. I think this is, you know, not necessarily something that's he's causing from the top down. It's just a systemic problem.
They all need to go. All of them. All of them.
I don't think that would go well either, but
I mean,
I don't know what the solution is.
The solution is your strategy sucks. You're in the middle of the race going, Charles, question, do you want to pit now? Question.
Hey, at least they asked him and he was able to like counter them instead of just trying to force him to do something that was ridiculous.
But then he still came in like for the fastest lap. They were like, do you want to come in? He's like, no, why would we do that? And they said, okay, come in. So it's like, what's the point?
I'm not really sure. That was, I mean, one point is going to make you zero difference when you're already this far behind in the championship. He actually slipped down to third in the driver standings. He's now behind Sergio Perez, who, for someone who I think has been really quiet all season, has not really been that impressive. I mean, he won Monaco. He's had a decent number of seconds, but other than that, it's like he's first, second, or he's nowhere.
Yeah, and listen, he's pretty much doing what Red Bull wants him to do. Stay out of the way of Max Verstappen.
Yep.
Anyway, sure. I guess the only other thing we have to really talk about from this race is Hamilton and Alonso. Hamilton tried to stuff it where there wasn't room. Clearly his fault. Two things. A, Fernando's comments on, I guess he only knows how to race if he starts in first. And... Yeah. So, okay, I don't, it's a little bit harsh, but the point is not necessarily incorrect. But the reporter afterwards who was trying to, like, rub it in that, like, that's what Alonso said, like, why? Like, the man is clearly trying to say, it's my fault, let's just move on. And she's like, but what do you think of what he says?
Didn't Lewis just say, I don't care what he said, and basically cut her off?
Yeah.
That's what I kind of remember hearing.
Yeah, he cut her off, and I was glad he did, like... As much of a mistake as he made there, like, the dude just wrecked out of the race. And then they made him walk back. So, like, just stop. There's some of these questions are so dumb.
I think Alonso actually said something afterwards about he didn't necessarily mean his comments. I mean, he was just pissed in the moment.
Yeah, he said something, and I don't, you know, naturally, I don't remember now either. But he was like, listen, I was angry. It happens, blah, blah, blah. So it's not a big deal.
I mean, those two were not the best of friends when they were teammates, but I don't think, or at least it doesn't seem like they have any lingering beef, necessarily.
Right.
But I don't necessarily understand why, this is probably going to piss people off, but why Hamilton wasn't penalized. I mean, I guess he was out of the race, so there's no really need to penalize him. But,
yeah.
I mean, he caused... you know, of avoidable contact, which he would have received a penalty. I guess it was on the opening lap and he's out of the race, so there's no reason to call it that way. But I don't know. If that situation had happened at any other point in the race, I think it would have been a penalty.
Yeah, it's opening lap. And we know F1 kind of makes up the rules as they go. Like, it changes week by week, driver by driver. So it's just he wrecked himself out of the race and he didn't really ruin Alonso's lap even, so yeah, I'm fine with no penalty on this one.
Just to even piss more people off, probably all Let's of those it. Who say that the FIA is like a concerted effort, they have some kind of conspiracy against Lewis, like, he wasn't penalized for this.
Yeah,
so explain that to me.
Yes,
well, I mean, it's random. I really think it's random, like you said. Yeah. I don't think they have a favorite. I mean, based on the end of last season, you would have thought they have a favorite. But, you know, they're inconsistent as usual.
One of my favorite social media comments that came out this week was that the FIA, with their technical regulation changes on the floorboard flexing and the ride height and whatever else, the other, you know, to compensate for porpoising, was done to help Max Verstappen and Red Bull easily win a championship. What? 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 You people,
they were supposed to be one of the ones taking advantage of that, that this would have clamped down on their car.
Right. Yeah. It's the social media is literally off the hinges lately with the Hamilton Verstappen conspiracy theories.
I think people are trying really hard not to blame Mercedes and to get super down about it because we're just used to seeing Lewis fight Max. But Max is doing what Lewis did for like 8 years right now because he's in the best car. And I mean, that's what Lewis was in. When you have an excellent driver, objectively, they're both fantastic drivers in the best car. This is what's going to happen. And that's just the way it is. It's not because of some interference by the FIA. This is just Adrian Newey being a genius again and getting the new regulations, which he seems to always be able to do when regulations change, just nail them.
Yeah, he's the GOAT at regulation change adaptation.
Yeah,
I think
for sure.
I don't think I made any words up there, but I said that so quick and there were so many big words in there that I confused myself. What do we have? I guess let's recap our predictions. I really don't even want to talk about Spa. It was a snoozer of a Sunday morning.
But it's back for next season.
That is good. I hope. I'm still hopeful because it's Spa. Also, real quick, before we do move on, the changes they made to, you know, Eau Rouge, where they added in the gravel up top, I forget if it was F2 or F3. Two guys crashed, hit the wall, and instead of bouncing back on the track, got stuck in the gravel. So, yay for it doing what it was intended to do and keeping everybody safe. So, predictions.
Okay, so neither of us did that well. My picks were Alonso, who finished fifth thanks to Charles and Ferrari. And then Mick Schumacher, who we have some news to get to about, who finished 17th. And so my average finishing position was 11th, so out of the points. And then I picked Ricciardo to fall out of Q2, or not make it out of Q2.
Yeah.
And he finished 11th in qualifying, so he did not. I was actually got that one right. You had Hamilton, which should have been a good pick, except for the first lap incident.
Yep.
Gasly, who finished 9th. This is one of the better results we've seen from him this season. And you said Alonso was going to fall out of
Q2.
I guess, or not make it out of Q2.
Yeah.
And where did he qualify? He was second place, right?
I think he was third or fourth. Yeah.
That's right. Because it was Perez who was in second place. Yeah, so your average finishing position was 14.5, so I very barely win that one, but not by much.
Yeah, that's definitely not one to write home about. Do we have any news to get to?
Yeah, I've actually got a couple of things to get to. The first of which is what I just hinted at about Mick Schumacher.
Yeah.
He is going to cut his ties with Ferrari at the end of this year, which is very interesting. I don't understand necessarily what's happening because we're not getting very many details, but I'm getting slightly worried about his future at this point with what we've been hearing about his relationship at Haas and now Ferrari's cutting ties. Not sure what's going on. He hasn't been a disappointment, in my opinion.
Is he cutting ties with Ferrari or is Ferrari cutting ties with him?
That is unclear.
Okay.
His contract is just ending. But it's not being renewed. So I don't know if that's both sides or if that's one or the other. I didn't hear that information anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I think after kind of a topsy-turvy couple of months to start the season, he's been more consistent the last month and a half, and not including the summer break, the couple races before summer break and Spa. And I don't think he quite made it into the points in Spa, but he was closer. He had what, a sixth or seventh place finish a race or two before the summer break. So I feel like this, if I were Mick, I would be running away from Ferrari. They're a hot mess. Nothing is going right there. Leclerc is going to be there for a long time. Sainz will be there for at least a couple more years. There's 86 drivers stuck in the Ferrari Academy who they don't know what to do with, like Robert Schwartzman, etc. So why would you want to stay there? At best, you move up to Alfa Romeo, and I mean, yes, it's a little bit better of a car, but it's not better enough to where you're like, oh my god, I have to stay with Ferrari to make this happen. Why not take a chance? There's a few openings this year. I'm sure next year there'll be a handful of open seats as well. So if you maybe you get an Alpine seat, or you get, I don't know, Aston Martin. No, Aston Martin's Alonso.
Yeah, and maybe Yuki's seat is the only other one that's potentially available, heard a lot of people connected to that already.
So it could be, obviously, yeah, or if Gasly goes to Alpine, then he can go to...
Right, yeah.
AlphaTauri. I almost called it Alfa yep. Rosso.
That actually yeah. sounds better.
Yeah, it does. But, so I think that's what he's doing here. He is hedging his bets on... one way, shape, or form, one of those handful of seats is going to open up, and he'll slide in there.
Hell, he could even go to Williams and probably, I mean, I don't think his results would change that much. We thought Haas was going to be awesome this season, and they really haven't been. Kevin Magnussen is 11th in the points with 22 points. Mick is down in 15th, but that's kind of unrepresentative because he only has 10 fewer points.
And I think Magnussen had like points in like his first two races or something. So yes. I feel like a 25% of his points came like right away. So if you take out the first few races where he was legitimately fast, he's been kind of underwhelming lately.
He's had points on 5 occasions. Mick has only had points on 2, which I mean, yeah, it's a difference, but it's not like he's blowing him out of the water.
No.
So I don't know. We'll see where he goes, but I thought that was pretty newsworthy because. I remember when we got all excited that the Schumacher name was reassociated with Ferrari, and now they're crushing our dreams of that beautiful redemption story.
Shocking.
Yeah. How unfortunate. Anyway, kind of related, apparently the FIA is considering the possibility of some kind of exemption, I guess, or I don't know what it's called, but... some kind of super license credentials for Colton Herta to come over and take that AlphaTauri seat. If Pierre Gasly, like you said, ends up going to Alpine, which I would love because that would be two French drivers on a French team. But we know that Ocon and Gasly have some history, and that might be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting first, especially if they could kind of rekindle a long lost friendship. Which, you know, you and I have talked about before, would be cool to see. And I think we would really be able to see what Gasly is capable of and kind of that next tier up car where there's not the Red Bull pressure breathing down his neck every move. So that'd be cool. And the super license thing, yeah, right after I tweeted, well, where is he getting the super license points? Like 5 people were like, well, the FIA is going to look into it. So
yeah, they could just make their own rules like we had just talked about. So.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to ignore the super, I do want to see Colton in F1 because I think he's a hell of a talent. My fear is what you just said and what we've said, the FIA making up rules as we go. Is this now going to open up a whole nother can of worms for other guys or challenges or lawsuits, or I don't know. It just feels like a slippery slope unless they clearly define the exemption, which we know the FIA, it will be confusing and lots of gray areas. So I don't know.
I don't know where this came from. The whole Herta to AlphaTauri thing, it seems like it popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's real or if it's just smoke and mirrors, but he's like 40 points short of a super license.
8 points short or 10 points short or something.
That's
what
I'm,
I read. That's what I read
reading.
This weekend.
Okay, if it's only 8 points, that's interesting because I've been seeing a lot more.
I thought he had 30 points or 32 points.
I'm not sure. I can look that up in a minute, but
yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.
No, I see that he has, 4 points for finishing seventh in IndyCar in 2019. 20 for third place in 2020 and 8 for fifth place. So that's
32.
Yeah, but how many do you need?
40.
Oh, you need 40.
Yeah.
Oh, he's short of the 30 points, is what I was reading. Okay, but only 8 points short. So that's not that much.
No. Yeah. It's not bad. I just, again, if they are very clear in, hey, we'll look at certain exemptions if you are over 30 points, if you are in another competitive series for X number of years and you have top five finishes in said series or whatever, whether it be.
They don't give anything for Indy Lights? At all?
He did not get anything for Indy Lights because
it was too small of a field, right? Yes. I'm remembering now.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was four cars that year or whatever. So, yeah. Sorry, Indy Lights. I love you.
Do you think he's actually going to show up to Formula One? Is this real? Because he's not getting the McLaren drive. That's all the IndyCar drivers that was dangled in front of. That's fake.
I don't know,
and Andretti's getting nowhere.
I have my doubts only because this is a lot of hoops to jump through. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say no.
So if he's teamed with Yuki, do you think they just wreck all the time?
It's going to be a very fast and very inconsistent field. But I will say right now, Herta will wipe the floor with Yuki next year.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed. That would be fun to watch.
Yes.
So we'll have to keep looking at this, but I think he's going to be involved in some FP1s, maybe, if they really want him, because that's going to bring him some points.
He's supposed
to do
one.
The closer he gets,
before the end of the year. I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but I cannot say, so.
I think it would make sense a certain place that he would do it. No.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's what you're thinking.
Okay. All right, well, I don't know why you're not telling me this information. I feel excluded.
I don't actually know anything. I'm just having fun.
Oh, okay. Well, you should have given me like a wink or something so I knew you were bluffing.
I did. You weren't looking.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. Well, now everyone sees the inside of how this works for us.
Yeah, we stare at each other awkwardly and make eye contact.
I don't know why this is happening because I took my athletic greens this morning. So that should be enough to keep me like focused, energized, all that kind of stuff. And thank you to them for sponsoring the show because I was actually already taking Athletic Greens before they became a sponsor, and now I need to maybe figure out if I can get it for them for a discount or for free. Athletic Greens, if you're listening, maybe I'll hit you up or you hit me up or something. I don't know how this is going to work, but it's a powder that's got like 75 different vitamins, so you don't have to take a bunch of pills. It tastes pretty good, especially if you mix it with something like orange juice. You can just mix it with water too, and you just take it in the morning. And actually, I really feel like it helps you with attention, energy, all that kind of stuff. It's got whatever adaptogens are in it. And just use our promo code at athleticgreens.com/emerging if you want to get, I believe, 5 travel packs and a free supply of vitamin D.
Yay.
Next in the news is that, and I'll get to that one later. Hold on a second. So, apparently Felipe Drugovich is aiming for an F1 reserve role next year because there are no race seats for next season. I don't know. He's not an academy driver, so he says he's completely free to just be a reserve driver anywhere. But I feel like because he's not an academy driver, that's where they take their reserve drivers from, all the teams. So do we see this, or is he coming to IndyCar like everyone says?
I see him ending up in, like, European Le Mans next year with, like, an FP1 yeah. session. I don't think he's coming in IndyCar. I don't think he's getting an F1 seat. He might get a reserve, or he might get, like, what's below it, a test driver or something like that, or yeah. you know, something. So, but no, I don't see it.
It seems like no one's all that impressed with him. I mean, he's been, well, this is his third year in Formula 2.
Yeah, and, I mean, no offense, but the F2 field, outside of two or three guys, like, really
yeah, like
is
Lawson,
not...
Lawson, Sargeant, and McDuin, pretty much, and maybe Theo Pourchaire.
Yeah, I mean, outside of those four is like, the least impressive F2 class I can remember.
I don't know about that. I feel like in recent memory.
Yeah, in recent years, not ever.
Trying to remember who was in. So he finished ninth in 2020 and eighth in 2021, and now he's leading the championship, but I don't think he's leading. Is it significant lead in the championship for Drugovic? Oh, yeah. Okay. He's got a pretty decent lead. So he may end up winning it, and he may be like another Nyck de Vries who doesn't ever end up in an F1 seat. Or maybe we'll see Nick come back, but I don't think people rate him even as highly. What was the year that Nicholas Latifi finished pretty high in Formula 2?
Oh, man.
I'm trying to look that up right now because that was one of the years where I was very unimpressed with the quality of the field. Okay, it was 2019, and that was the year that Nyck de Vries just like basically destroyed.
Yeah, so right.
he was pretty much it. I mean, Luca Giotto finished third, and then Sergio Sette Câmara, who's in Formula E, finished fourth. And yeah, other than that, it wasn't that impressive of a field. Mick Schumacher, it looks like, won his first Formula 2 race. But yeah, I think we're in another year where the crop is pretty thin. So the guys that don't win the championship are actually maybe those who we will see have a better chance at moving up.
Makes sense. What's next?
The contract recognition board met on Monday, I think virtually, to try to figure out this whole Piastri situation.
Yeah. Why have we not heard anything yet? How hard
can this be? I don't know why we haven't heard, because from what the rumors that are swirling everywhere from insiders, it seems that, and no one I don't think that's sharing this news has seen the Alpine contract that Piastri had, but it sounded like Piastri waited until the day he was free to talk to other teams, and then there was nothing completely signed with Alpine, and McLaren just swooped in. So, I think Alpine's probably going to end up getting screwed, and someone else will end up in that seat, and Piastri will be alongside Lando Norris next season, which will be very interesting, because if he can't compete with Lando, then what does that say about Lando? Because everybody rates Piastri like the next coming.
I guess we'll find out. I don't know a lot about him, so I can't speak too much to his talent, but everybody loves him.
He's an Aussie too, right? So one Aussie to the next. Yeah. Okay. So that would be interesting to watch. And then the last thing I think I have to cover before we get into Zandvoort this weekend in detail is that there's going to be DRS in that final banked turn coming up this weekend. To call that white knuckle, which I've seen it described a few times, is an understatement in my opinion.
I feel like this could either be the coolest thing ever, or a gigantic shit show, or a complete, you know, nobody can pass because there's DRS there. I mean, when you come out of that banked turn, it's kind of a windy section there, right? Like we're not
onto the front straight.
Okay, that bank.
That I was, one.
Yeah.
Not the first one that in the lap, the bank turn, no.
Yeah, so
which is
now
like turn 3 or 4 or something.
Yeah.
I know what you're thinking about.
Yeah, so now you're just extending the DRS at, I don't know, quarter mile or so.
Yeah.
Or maybe probably even more than that. I guess it depends on where exactly you get the DRS. So, yeah, that's going to make passing down the straight probably even more pathetic than we just saw at Spa last weekend. So, assuming there's not a DRS train or somebody doesn't wall it or spin because of a little bit less downforce they have with the
yeah. In the back, just like losing grip as you go around that corner. I could see that.
It could either be really cool or a complete dud, and I feel like there's going to be no in between.
Honestly, I think that's how F1 has been as of late. It's either like fantastic or it just doesn't meet expectations whatsoever.
Before I have the F1 times in front of me for the weekend.
Yes.
I don't find myself as enthusiastic during the races this year as last year. It just feels like races peter out a lot quicker this year than last year. Like, even championship battle notwithstanding, like, a good battle is a good battle, and it just feels like the good battles are harder to find this year.
I think part of it is that we had extremely high expectations based on everything that was said and hyped about what the new cars were going to do, and yes, they can follow, but they still can't get past.
Right.
So it hasn't done what we expected, and that's a big letdown. But, I mean, it's still exciting. I'm still enjoying it, of course. But I'm hoping that there's, I don't know. I don't want to say this because I know people are going to get really pissed off. And I don't really have a dog in this fight, or whatever you say, a horse in this, what do you say? What's the
dog in this fight? Yeah, definitely not
okay,
a horse
right.
in the fight.
I was going to say a horse in this fight, but that's a horse in this race is the other one.
We have our episode title, A Horse in This Fight.
That's like a Ferrari story or something.
Probably.
I kind of want Ferrari to just start going on a rampage for a little bit and maybe some bad luck to befall Max just so that there's a championship battle again. So that we have a fight, but doesn't look like that's going to happen because Max appears to get more and more confident as the points lead grows, and he's on a roll right now. That was a masterclass at Spa.
Yes, that was a truly dominating race starting from 14th.
Yeah, but he made it look so easy.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that car is like a knife through butter for the rest of the field.
Yeah.
To use another like weird, outdated
cliche
idiom. Yeah, cliche. I'm gonna just keep throwing those out there now. Maybe that'll be my new thing. But I kind of get what you mean, but I still have hope. I'm still an F1 diehard.
I mean, me too, but let's just continue with the theme of annoying people during this episode. I enjoyed the NASCAR race more than I did the F1 race this weekend.
I have yet to watch any other NASCAR race this season than the Daytona 500.
This was the first one
I was
watched
going
since
to
Daytona.
Watch Watkins Glen, and then I heard that Kimi crashed out and deleted the recording. Maybe I'll have to start watching, but I don't know. The fact that they're 3 hours,
it's too much of a time commitment for me.
Yeah.
It just happened to be a weekend where I finally had nothing to do. Anyway.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true.
Zandvoort times, practice is 6:30 a.m. and 10 a.m. Eastern on Friday. Qualifying is 9 a.m. Saturday. Race is 9 a.m. Sunday. There's also F2 at 11 a.m. Saturday. That's not too bad. And then at Butthole O'Clock on Sunday morning at 4:20 in the morning, F3 is all ridiculous hours. So, you know, we're not even going to worry about that. There's also Porsche Super Cup, so they can crash and delay qualifying for a second weekend in a row. Zandvoort, super cool track, one of my favorite. It's really difficult to pass, you know, especially as I was saying a couple minutes ago, like that banked turn 3 or 4, whatever it is. Once you come out of that,
that is for sure.
You know, it's tight and windy. You go through a couple right hand turns before a tight left hand turn, and then you're at the back of the track. And it's just, there's not a lot of passing opportunities other than the straight, which, you know, now has a 6-mile DRS zone, which sucks, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
It's turn three. It is. So we got that right. It's turn three is there, and it has a, I will just butcher this for the sake of everyone's entertainment.
Yeah.
I don't mean it to be offensive, but I know some people will probably take it that way. Hugenholzbacht. That sounded more German than Dutch, but that's how I pronounced it.
Okay, that's, I mean, that's respectable. And
there's an Ari Leyendijk corner. Is that last? I didn't realize that was the name of turn 14. That last big banked corner is Ari Leyendijk balked or bocked. That must mean bend or something at turn.
Sure. I'm not trying to learn Dutch. I struggle enough with one language. But I'm sure this weekend we'll see the return of the obnoxious orange smoke from the stands that I don't understand how
every
people...
race.
I get that, you know, Verstappen fans are very passionate.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But the orange smoke, how do racetracks allow people to bring that stuff in?
That blinds everyone in the stand when there's racing action going on the track.
Yeah. I'm not paying $8 million for a grandstand ticket to get blinded by orange smoke most of the time.
Exactly.
Or red smoke or green smoke.
Yeah,
whatever.
Whoever, no one should be able to blow off smoke bombs, regardless of who you're a fan of. That just seems inconsiderate to other fans. I don't like that.
Yep, agreed. Is there anything else? Should we dump into the predictions?
I think that's it. I want to say I had an update on Logan Sargeant too, real quick, because he seems to be maybe connected with Williams. What do we think about that? With Nicholas Latifi making another clumsy mistake this weekend, and really, I mean, Alex Albon, I want to say, had a pretty good race, finishing 10th. He stopped everyone from passing him. Did you see what he posted on Twitter or Instagram with, like, that Photoshop picture of the super wide Williams? He, like, basically stretched it. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
What do you think about Logan Sargeant? Any chance that he takes that seat? I mean, I know he's got financial backing, because I forget what his family does, but they are rather well off.
I would say there's that would be my non-Latifi choice right now if I was making predictions, would be Sargeant.
Is that because he's American or because you think he's got the talent, or both?
I think he's got the talent. I've heard people, like, when he was in the Road to Indy scholarship test years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
People were like, oh my God, I can't believe we didn't pick him. So, you know, they missed out. Now it's F1's chance to gain on him. And if they don't, we'll take him back. All right.
I think he also has enough super license points.
I'm pretty sure
that makes
him
a very valid choice.
Yeah, but let's, you know what? I'm going to save a super license argument for another day.
Yeah, off-season argument or something.
Yeah, off-season argument. Predictions. All right, we'll just do one inside the top 10, one outside the top 10, and Q2 elimination. You start.
Okay, can we say at this point that we cannot choose Max because he's just basically running away with this?
Yes.
I think at this point, we're not. He's won three in a row now. So,
and you can take out Max at the top and Latifi at the bottom.
Yeah, good point, because Latifi has still not scored points this season, which is just absolutely pathetically sad.
Yep. All right.
I feel like he's been given ample opportunity to prove himself, and he really hasn't, but oh well.
Yeah. Yeah, he screwed up again last weekend. Anyway, go ahead. You start.
Okay, so Zandvoort, you know what? I think I'm going to go with Sebastian Vettel for my outside the top 10, because he was... I mean, when he's on it, he still can pull out a result, even in a car that's kind of crappy.
All right, I am going to take, since we talked about him, Mick Schumacher.
Okay. My inside the top 10 choice then will be Esteban Ocon, because he's been pretty consistent.
All right, I will take... This is painful. I will take Charles Leclerc.
Okay. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, the ceiling is very high, but the floor is extremely low. Yeah.
All right. Your Q2 elimination.
Hmm. Is Lance Stroll low-hanging fruit?
No. I mean, if he's making it to Q2, I would say no.
That's a good point. He might not even make it to Q2.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. I'm going to pick Gasly. He's going to get eliminated in Q2.
All right. I'm going Kevin Magnussen.
Okay. Yep. That seems reasonable.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to recap this. Is there another race next weekend?
I think it's three in a row. Yeah, because we have Monza coming up. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's the weekend after.
So we have another sprint race coming up soon. So exciting.
Hold on. Let me see.
Can't wait.
Yes, it's September 11th is that race. So it's the same weekend as the IndyCar finale.
Okay. I will probably... Oh, I'll be able to watch it because of the... Actually,
it'll
I don't
West
know.
Coast.
Yeah, the time difference, time zones make my head hurt. So
it'll be really early there for you.
Yeah, probably not going to watch that. I'll probably watch it on the flight on the way home. Because
let's say it's 9 a.m. here, then it'll be 6 a.m. in California.
Yeah, and I don't do 6 a.m. no matter what of racing.
Yeah.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.